Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. John Frisby. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm John Frisby, President of the U.S.-China Business Council, and I want to thank those of you on the call for joining us about this important report by Oxford Economics on China's impact on the U.S. economy. Michael Zelenziger of Oxford Economics will speak about the methodology and the findings of the study in a moment. I just wanted to take a couple of minutes up front explaining why the U.S.-China Business Council chose to commission this study. The impact of China on the U.S. economy has been widely discussed in the past election cycle, but a balanced assessment of the impact of China on the U.S. economy has largely been missing. Much was said about the negative impact of trade with China, with estimates of jobs lost receiving considerable attention, but the positive effects of the commercial relationship with China were largely ignored, and therefore there really hasn't been any overall context or assessment provided. This report, we hope, will serve to fill this void and provide a realistic and balanced approach to understanding the relationship with our most important trade partner. Now that campaigning is about the transition to policymaking, it's time to make sure that those policies are based on a full understanding of their trade relationship, and presenting only the negative impact and ignoring jobs created, lower inflation, and other benefits of trade with China can lead to policies based on incomplete or misleading information. This is certainly a relationship that's important for the United States to get right. There are a lot of challenges presented by China. There are a lot of questions about China's policy direction. The American business community's confidence is sagging as China's reforms have stagnated. But as China's economy transitions and matures, there's an opportunity for significant economic benefits for the United States, provided that China moves forward with reforms and openings. The U.S.-China Business Council issued a number of infographics on key topics during the campaign season that remain relevant. However, this report by Oxford Economics pulls it all together and provides a fuller picture of China's impact on the U.S. economy, with the objective of making sure that the right policy choices are made going forward. So that explains why we commissioned the study. Let me now turn it over to Oxford Economics' Michael Zelenziger to discuss the findings and methodology.
Thank you, John, and good morning, everyone. I'm Michael Zelenziger, Managing Editor for Thought Leadership at Oxford Economics. I'm joined on this call today by Scott Livermore, who's Managing Director of Macro and Industry Services for Oxford and head of our New York City office. We're here today to make a fuller explanation of what the Chinese-U.S. relationship is all about. Headline trade data and U.S. trade deficit statistics bury some important realities about the nature of the trading relationship between the world's two largest economies, and comes in the context of the rise of China since its opening up in 1979, which is really unprecedented in economic history given the sheer size of its population and the speed with which it entered the global economy. It's easy to point to dislocations created by global trade, like shuttered factories producing textiles or machine parts, and clearly it's one reason for Donald Trump's election victory. But many other tangible benefits of trade are very important to our economic growth, if less easily measured. If we think about the future of low-wage labor globally, cheap-wage labor is likely to be replaced by robots in the near future, even in China, as even Foxconn is investing in robots to help build iPhones. It's not clear to us that the future of U.S. prosperity will come from manufacturing plastic dustpans or wooden brooms. And in fact, the sectors in which we can expect robust growth in China are those in which American firms have taken the lead and have a great deal to offer. As Chinese consumers get wealthier, they see more Hollywood movies, buy more iPhones, and eat more burgers made from U.S. beef. These are all quintessentially American strengths in which American companies offer unique competitive advantages, and continuing growth in China helps these U.S. companies and our economy grow as well. This study was created at the request of the Business Council, to help us better understand the various dynamics that characterize the U.S.-China economic relationship. Now that China is the world's second largest economy, with a population three times the size of the United States, we should all remember that China contributed a third of global GDP growth in 2015 alone. In 1980, the Japan, U.S., and the EU were responsible for about 60% of global GDP. Today, that number is only about 36% because of the rise of the rest of the world, including China. So let me just quickly run through some key findings from the report that I think will be of interest and explain China's rise, which has had an enormous and positive effect on the U.S. Once America's 11th largest export market in 2000, China has grown to become the third largest destination for American goods and services today. U.S. exports to China directly and indirectly supported 1.8 million new jobs and $165 billion in GDP in 2015, when the economic benefits generated by U.S. investments in China and Chinese investments in the U.S. are added to the total, the number of jobs equals 2.6 million, and the GDP number is $216 billion. This makes China the third largest market for U.S. exports behind Mexico and Canada. And of course, China is growing faster than those countries because it is coming off a much lower economic base. By 2030, we project that 10% of total U.S. exports, or about $525 billion, will be ticketed to China. The $165 billion in goods and services that China purchased from the U.S. in 2015 represents over 7% of all U.S. exports and about 1% of total U.S. economic output. Though our trade deficit with China is about $334 billion, or about 1.9% of total GDP, much of the goods we import from China actually have a large component of U.S.-made subassemblies, components, and intellectual property. If you strip out the value-added component, foreign components of Chinese exports, the trade deficit with China actually falls by nearly 50% to about 1% of GDP. And this figure is broadly in line with the U.S. trade deficit with the European Union today. The U.S. has a trade surplus with China when it comes to services. Including this service component lowers the deficit to just 0.8% of GDP, and it is in the service sector of the economy where the U.S. is poised for accelerating growth in the coming decade, as we project that China's middle class will increase enormously. We expect 160 million Chinese consumers to be middle class by 2025, with incomes exceeding $35,000 per year. And these are precisely the consumers that are likely to seek out U.S. services and goods. We must also recognize that China's low-wage labor is responsible for the near absence of inflation in the U.S. and the fact that prices for many consumer goods have been dropping in recent years. At an aggregate level, U.S. consumer prices are 1 to 1.5% lower because of cheaper Chinese imports. The typical U.S. household earned about $56,500 in 2015. Trade with China therefore reduced their spending by up to $850. Travel to Iowa or Illinois, and you will soon see that many U.S. farmers recognize that the Chinese market is a significant purchaser of grains, beef, and pork. In 2015, China purchased an estimated $15 billion in agricultural goods. Illinois and Texas alone each accounted for $1 billion of this total. Finally, you'll see in our report that countries that engage and trade with China do better economically than those countries that don't. China has contributed more to global growth over the past 15 years than the Eurozone and the U.S. combined. Despite the U.S. recession of 2008, we've experienced stronger growth than most other developed countries since 2000, a compound annual growth rate of 1.8%. And a great deal of this growth is because of U.S. trade with China. And this trade helps boost U.S. productivity, which is the real key to growing future U.S. prosperity. Let me stop there, and we're available to take your questions.
At At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we will pause a moment to allow questions to queue. And we will take our first question from Wahua Chen with China Daily. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for holding the event. You know, my question is, you know, I mean, about the timing of the report, why now? I mean, when you start to commission the report to Oxford Economics, why not, I mean, sort of do it during the campaign? There is so many much sort of toxic rhetoric during the campaign. It seems no one coming out, not many at least, coming out to correct that misinformation, fake news. That's a popular trendy word now. I mean, why, like U.S. leaders from President Obama to U.S. trade official not coming talk much about the positive side of U.S.-China trade and let those toxic rhetorics by Trump campaign sort of proliferate? Thank you very much.
Well, this is John Frisbee at the U.S.-China Business Council. As I said at the outset, we commissioned the study precisely because of the negative noise about trade and trade with China during the campaign, and asked Oxford Economics to do this study, which of course takes some time to do. The study was completed, and now that we've gotten out of the campaign and it's time to turn to policymaking, we think this is an important time to get this study out there.
But what would you interpret why U.S. Leaders don't really say much publicly about the positive side of the U.S.-China trade? I have not heard much on it, actually.
I can't speak for U.S. leaders and answer that question, but certainly that's the reason why we commissioned this report.
Thank you.
We will go next to Gary Dodders with Site Selection. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Gary, please check the mute function on your phone.
Hello. Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry. Page 11 of the report, you say Chinese firms are beginning to invest in the United States. The Rhodium Group, I believe, reported within the last 3 weeks that Chinese investment in the U.S. had, in fact, gone up by a factor of threefold. I wonder how you see the growth of Chinese investment in the U.S. developing over the next 5 years.
Should I go ahead? This is Scott Livermore from Oxford Economics. I think it's increasingly likely that China will continue to be looking for outbound investment opportunities, including into the U.S. So although we don't have a precise figure for the rate of increase over the next 5 years, it is likely to continue to be on a upward trajectory. And as we've highlighted in the report, the investment to date has generally been positive for the U.S. It supports activity, creates jobs, and supports activity further down the supply chain. And we expect those benefits to grow over the next few years as FDI rises.
Okay, and while you're there, I wondered if you could sort of walk us through Figure 5 there that's also on page 11. Kind of talk us through what the bars and the line mean, if you have the report in front of you.
Yeah, I do. So the bars, and that refers to the left-hand column, that shows accumulated FDI. So each year, Chinese investors will invest in the U.S., and that is accumulated over time. So it builds up and it measures the total stock. So on this figure by 2015, there's around 15 billion invested in the U.S. and the red line, which refers to the right-hand axis, so the percentages, that says China's share in total FDI. And as you can see, it's a relatively low share of total FDI, reflecting China's state of economic development, and as Michael highlighted, as they continue to grow fast, move up the income ladder, they're much more likely to be looking for investment opportunities globally, and we'd expect that share to increase over the forecast period.
Okay, and is that John talking there?
No, this is Scott Livermore from Oxford Economics.
Scott, thank you very much.
Let me add one other point. It's Michael Zelenziger, which is we've seen Chinese wage labor go up significantly in the last few years, and there has been in the United States the beginning of what's being referred to as an onshoring movement, as people realize that the benefits of investing in China are occasionally not as important as things like being close to the market. So you see not only U.S. firms reinvesting at home, but you actually see some Chinese firms getting into things like auto parts to become closer linked to the American supply chain, just as 20 years ago, Americans went into China to become integrated into their supply chain. So it is a track that's moving both ways.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, that was star and one to ask a question. We'll go next to Jessica Stone with JTB. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. This is Jessica Stone from CGTN. Two questions. Number one, have you sent this to anybody in the incoming administration? Number two, what are your thoughts on the future of U.S.-China trade, given the trends that you were starting to talk about with higher production costs in China?
First question is whether this report is being sent to members of the incoming administration. The answer to that is it's being widely distributed, so yes, it will be received. Second question as to the future of the relationship, I guess the point I would make is one that I highlighted in my opening remarks, and sorry, I didn't identify myself. This is John Frisby with the U.S.-China Business Council. I think for the benefits to be fully realized that the Oxford Economics team has pointed out in the study, it's important to remember that for American companies to fully realize those benefits, China needs to move forward with more reforms and openings to reduce market access barriers and create a more level playing field. Reforms have not really moved very much in the past few years, which is leading, as I said, to policy uncertainty amongst the American business community and some loss of confidence about the reform process. I think it's critical for China to move forward with those reforms, and it's integral to American companies actually being able to fully realize the benefits of China's economic growth that will come.
John, if I can just follow the slowing of Chinese growth, have you guys factored that into your assessment?
From the U.S.-China Business Council's perspective, we have, but I think it's important to remember China's economy is much bigger. It actually grows more in real terms now at, 6.5% growth than it did a decade ago at 12% growth because its economy is so much bigger. But I'll let the Oxford Economics folks address that more.
Yeah, this is Scott Livermore from Oxford Economics. And what John said is exactly right. 6% now is much bigger in dollar terms than 10% 5-6 years ago. So although the growth rate's slowing, what China is adding as a market size is most likely increasing. And the second point to emphasize, which Michael touched upon in his introduction, is what you have to look at is also the composition of the people within China. So the middle class, the people with higher incomes are also growing rapidly, and the population base of the market base is also increasing in size. And that's very important for the types of goods and particularly services that the U.S. economy will export over the next couple of years. And it should enable increased penetration across the goods and services that the U.S. exports.
Thanks, guys.
Once again, That was star and one to ask a question. And we will pause a moment to allow questions to queue. And at this time, it appears there are no further questions.
Anymore. All right. I guess we will wrap it up then. Thank you again, everyone, for joining, and thanks to the Oxford Economics team for putting together this well-done report.
Thank you all.
You're welcome.